This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Join us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotlines, our buddy Chris Russell, Capitals insider for The Fan, and he is presented by Dominion Jewelers. Custom engagement rings, jewelry in the heart of Falls Church. They make it beautiful. You make it yours. DominionJewelers.com. Hey, Chris.
Hey, good morning.
Hello, JP. Rooster. Good morning to you.
So many power plays last night for the Lightning. What was going on?
Just a lack of discipline, game one and two Columbus style is, I guess, the best way I could put it. Remember in the first two losses of that series, the Caps not only were undisciplined in terms of taking them, but they were bad at killing them. They were 4 of 8, was Columbus through the first two regulation periods, two games of that series, both losses, both in overtime, both blown leads. This time the Capitals didn't blow a lead, but they took them, and they didn't kill them, at least in the first two. And Tampa Bay's really good on the power play, as they were throughout the regular season, third on the power play during the regular season. They're 5 of 12 now in the series, and 2 goals in each of the last 2 games. And you know, I said it after the first period, you know, after the, after the first power play goal. I said, look, you just cannot continue to give. And I know it's easier said than done, but the bottom line is they just can. You continue to give them 5-on-4 chances. They're too good. They're going to make you pay. And sure as you know what, they did.
Rooster, why are the Caps so scorching hot on the road but mediocre at Capital One Arena? I know that the atmosphere there is great. I know the crowd gets into the games. What is it? What is this disconnect between them playing so well on the road and just kind of ho-hum at home?
I don't think anybody has an answer, Kix. They're 6-8 over the last two years combined at Capital One Arena in the Stanley Cup playoffs at home. 3-4 this year, 3-4 last year. In all the Stanley Cup playoff home games that they had. I mean, that's just incredible. Now, if you look across the board at the numbers, and I put this in my blog, I'm not sure if it's up yet, and this is via ESPN, I think all home teams this year are now like 32-39 at home. So it's a league-wide epidemic. But for the Capitals, it's been a couple of years now where they just have not played well at home. The thing that I fear, and the thing that I feared going into last night, and it was the thing that I feared going into these playoffs, is, you know, sometimes you just get a little too comfortable. You get a little too lax. You think, all right, things are going to happen. The crowd is going to save us. We're too, I guess, complacent or too feeling too good about themselves, maybe feeling a little too handling prosperity not exactly the way you should. You play with your hair on fire on the road. I won't forget what Evgeny Kuznetsov told us before the series. It was like, I like playing on the road. I don't really like playing at home. You know, I think he gets, for lack of a better term, you know, he gets a little rush out of it. And not that he played poorly last night. He had 12 shots on goal, but he got killed in the faceoff circle. So maybe there's something to that, that this team and him and others play just better when they're on the road and when they're getting booed and when there's not that comfortable surrounding and they know they don't have the crowd to bail them out.
All right, it's not a conscious thing. There's no question about it. You know, I mean, they want to do their best. They want to try their best. And I'm sure, you know, consciously they are. But it does seem to be a different level that you're seeing, a different product that you're seeing on the ice.
Yeah. Because last night, EB, I thought they had a pretty decent start. They came out, they outshot the Lightning 4-0 the first, was 6-7 minutes of the game. Tampa didn't have a shot. I think it was actually the first 7 or 8 minutes of the game. They didn't have a shot. But then once Tampa started feeling their oats a little bit, they got rolling. And before you know it, not only was it 1-0 on the scoreboard, it was 10-10 in terms of shots on goal. And I started to wonder, maybe this isn't going to go the way, I guess we had all hoped, and certainly if they don't stay out of the box. And again, that's ultimately the equalizer here. But then when they, even when it was 3-0, as bad as they had played, I didn't think they played poorly, as poorly offensively as 3-0 would indicate. I thought they had their opportunities, and then they got the Connolly goal. Great play by Niskanen at the point. Nice feed by Stevenson. It's 3-1. Then they're peppering Vasilevsky, and they're all over the place, and the crowd is back into it, and you're like, okay, they're going to do this. They're going to seize this momentum. This is what being at home is all about. And then, not before you know it, but just a couple of minutes later, they give up one of these weird kind of, How did that happen? Loose mm-hmm. puck off of, and before you know it, the air is just completely deflated. I mean, just like, so that's what happens when you're at home, is when you give up the type of goals that they gave up last night in the kind of situations that they gave up, two quick ones to make it 1-0 to 3-0. And then you've got that momentum at 3-1, and then all of a sudden it's 4-1. Then it's really bad. It compounds the problem when you're at home and that stuff happens.
Talking to our Capitals insider, Chris Russell. He was at game 3 last night at Capital One. A couple of things that we have talked about that could be different in game 4. Kind of want your take on it. One being Nicklas Backstrom.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any new information, what you saw yesterday. And then number 2, the hit on Tom Wilson. If Tom Wilson delivered it on the Lightning player, he would be suspended. Yep. Is there any chance that you're going to see suspension for Anton Stralman?
Yeah, Tommy was not happy after the game, and neither should he. It was clearly boarding. They only called the minor. It should have been probably a major. It could have been a game misconduct. NHL player safety, I have no doubt, will take a look at it. I'm going to have to, quite honestly, boys, I have not had a chance to look at Anton Stralman's entire league discipline player history. He doesn't certainly have the track record that Tom Wilson has. So I wouldn't count on it in terms of a suspension. It was certainly Barry Trotz strongly indicated that not only does he want NHL player safety to look at it, but he feels discipline should be warranted. Now, again, whether that's in the form of a fine or whatever, it hurts the Capitals' cause that Wilson came in terms of discipline, that Wilson came back just a couple of shifts later. One, two, that that they only called a minor, that it wasn't a 5-minute major or something like that, game misconduct style. So that's what I'll say about that. I'll leave it in the hands of the NHL. I don't think a suspension is coming. I could be wrong. Certainly, it warrants that. As far as Backstrom. So yesterday morning at game day skate, he was certainly out there. He did not participate in any of the line rushes, much like he's been doing the last couple of games. He had his stick. He was hanging out with one of the assistant coaches. He didn't do much. Now that they've lost, I mean, it's impossible for me to say because I haven't seen him take a face-off. So I think they can pad him up and get him ready to go, and now is when I would probably do it. So as long as he's cleared medically, and from what I guess people have speculated, I guess I'll just leave it at that, is back of his hand, maybe a chip, maybe a slight fracture. As long as they can pad him up and they feel pretty confident, he wouldn't be out there for that morning skate if he was so bad that he had no chance of playing.
Right.
So I think he could play.
Have we seen him, shooting pucks? What have we seen?
The parts that I have seen, because they only practiced once yesterday, mm-hmm. and it was the game day skate, he was on the ice in Tampa a little bit, too, is I have not seen him actually shoot the puck, because yesterday – He stayed out on the ice while we were in the locker room. So when I came out of the locker room, he was still out on the ice. I did not see him shooting the actual puck. I know he has worked with the stick and the puck in terms of, you know, occasionally, like, you know, like with the puck on his stick, but not shooting in the classic sense of what you're going to have to do in a contested shot, in a slap shot, snapshot type environment in a game. And more importantly, Eric, I think, at least in my eyes, faceoffs, where they sucked last night. They weren't good enough faceoff-wise. Kuznetsov was terrible last night faceoff-wise. So these are all the things that they have to be convinced of before they play him. There was no argument to be made when they were up 2-0 or when they hadn't lost. Now at least there's an argument. But we won't know at least until tomorrow morning at Kettler when we see if he's doing anything more. And I'll be there for the morning skate. We certainly won't know anything today. They won't tell you tomorrow morning if he's going to play. We won't know until about a half an hour before game four tomorrow night.
Joined by Chris Russell, Capitals insider for The Fan, presented by Dominion Jewelers. In the first two games, the Caps had a ton of odd man rushes, three on twos, two on ones. The Lightning knew they had to button that up in game three. How were they able to do that, and how can the Caps get back to that in game four?
The single biggest key in my eyes. I had asked Barry Trotz about that yesterday morning, Cakes, if he was surprised about how many odd man rushes they had. And he was like, no, not really. We studied that. We saw that as a weakness in them, aggressive D pinching. And, you know, they got a little desperate and we were able to counter it. They weren't able to do it last night. And Victor Hedman talked about it last night. Their stud defenseman and John Cooper talked about it. They said they all agreed it was the number one thing and the number one key and the number one emphasis from Tampa Bay from games one and two to game three. They bottled it up in the neutral zone. They did not allow the Caps to get that transition, that speed, that fury through the neutral zone and into the attack zone. It sounds easy, but it's not. John Cooper was asked, hey, what was the difference between games one and two and game three? He simply has one thing, quote, we checked. You know, so it was taking the body. It was better positioning in the neutral zone, denying speed, better positioning to allow that, I guess that not only that speed, but that puck possession through the neutral zone, which allows those 2-on-1, 3-on-2 breaks, not as careless with the puck in terms of turnovers. The Capitals got them, I don't want to say in every game against Pittsburgh, because that's not correct. Game four against Pittsburgh, they didn't get them. But they did get them throughout that series in many games. So now it's, you know, what they have to do is they have to aggressively try and, you know, counter what Tampa's doing through the neutral zone with more stretch passes, with, you know, maybe being a little bit more aggressive on the double forecheck that they were, I thought, pretty aggressive with earlier in the playoffs, including in the Pittsburgh series, where you send the puck hard around the corner and around the boards, and you're sending two guys in there, and, you know, then you're getting two guys in there and you're trying to force turnovers. That doesn't necessarily help you on the odd man breaks, but it breaks up some of that neutral zone trap. It breaks up some of that wall of defense so that hopefully it loosens things up through the middle of the ice for you.
It's our pal Chris Russell, who's brought to you by Dominion Jewelers. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, buddy.
Fellas. Appreciate you. Good morning.
Yep. All right.
Thanks, Rooster.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
I don't know why this popped in my head. We've been doing the show for so long, and we've met so many great people over the years. But I remember there was a period of time, probably a decade ago, where we were getting free breakfast and EP hated it. Do you remember?
Why?
I don't want to mention the endorsement. I don't know. You just thought it was trash, that it was terrible.
Does that company still exist?
I don't even remember the name of the company. I vaguely remember you
Why,
complaining.
Was it like dry, burnt crap?
It was probably from like
Do you remember who it was, Valdez? Were you with us at that time?
I was going to write something down and then see if
I just don't remember. But I'm sure. Listen. I'll admit this.
I just remember every
I'm
time they would come in, you would just complain
just
about
sneer
this.
At it.
Yeah, it was probably from a sports bar or something like that.
I'm a snob.
Well,
you have to cook your food right. I don't have to have fancy food, but if like it's simple, like if you overcook chicken or you overcook a sausage,
I feel like they were just bringing in like pancakes too.
Well, it's hard to mess something up pancakes.
Right.
I just need a sausage.
The whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know how you can mess up. Let me see. Hold on. Valdez is writing something. Lift it up a little higher so I can see.
I just need a sausage.
It could be. I
don't even know that
really
place.
Remember.
I have no recollection of that place.
Anyway, we're going to give away some great prizes here in moments. We'll play Fact or Fiction. You can call in at 800-636-1067. Two things to bring up real quick. I actually heard Blue Shorts talk about this. I don't know if you're aware of this, EB.
Hmm.
But the Valdez gray hair topic,
yes,
became a story on thefandc.com.
I know Shorts
and
was
really. It's all about
clamoring,
taunting
that.
You,
right?
He took
around.
One
that's
Valdez
Shorts's
picture.
Shorts' life is a taunt.
Yeah, it's the Valdez picture where he's sitting at a picnic at his in-laws at their fancy estate. He's eating beets. He's drinking Michelob Ultra, and then he's looking at the camera with just a shockingly
wishing I was watching Tiger.
Just with a shock of white slash gray hair.
Yeah. Right.
And he couldn't believe how gray his hair has been.
Well, I logged onto the website.
Right.
And I found the article and I was like, oh man, I got some attention dollars.
Right. Oh, you were psyched.
I was psyched to read all
this. The headline is.
This was yesterday?
The headline is something like Valdez is going
gray. This is Matt
gray.
Valdez.
Or he's
right.
all gray.
Something
then,
like
and
that.
And then Shorts texted me. He's like, hey, what one was the gray bashing? On you. And I was like, oh, it was yesterday. He goes, I'm writing an article about it. I was all psyched.
Yeah, the headline is Valdez has gone completely gray.
And so I click on the article.
A Chris Lingenbach.
And I'm scrolling through it and everything. And there's just 10 million pictures of EB.
Right.
And it's not even about me.
And he just writes compare. Like he shows a picture of Valdez and then he shows an awful picture of you. Like the right. worst pictures you've ever taken.
Right.
And then he goes, compare.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he shows a picture of EB at FanFest. Then he shows a still of EB in his Crop Metcalf commercial.
Then you and your casual jacket on ESPN.
And then there's another inner cut of Valdez staring at the camera.
I keep going. Let me see the
one. I mean, and it's just a pile on.
There's EB walking down the street in D.C.
Right. I mean, that's a particularly horrible picture. Looks like a hobo.
Well, he's just staring, looking at his phone. I mean,
I'm reading texts as I'm
and
walking.
There's another picture of Valdez.
Right.
And then the still shot
from
ESPN.
I think I look great at the one on ESPN. I got no problem with that one.
So you can check it out, thefandc.com. This other story is not just a web story, but it's where I saw the story about Lucas Glover. I know nothing about him as a golfer. Can you fill me in, EB?
Well, how could you?
Well, I think he won.
Is he accomplished?
He won a major. I think he won the U.S. Open maybe in 2009 or something like that. But it's been, you know, he really hasn't won much since, if anything. So kind of one of those fluky kind of guys.
Okay.
A lot of talent, but you
one off.
For the most part, yeah.
But he's been on the PGA Tour for years, so he's clearly made a bunch of money.
Sure. The major champion.
Back in the news because he told police that his wife attacked him Saturday and called him the P word and a loser because he played poorly in a golf tournament earlier that day.
You're such a loser.
The police report states that Lucas said that every time he plays poorly in a tournament, she begins yelling at him, stating he's a loser and the P word, and ultimately start an altercation with him about his performance. She apparently had been drinking throughout the day before the fight.
Hey, she's an alcoholic.
Eventually arrested for domestic violence, but cops
believe he was bleeding and his mother was bleeding.
Yeah. She became combative. She resisted arrest.
She's a psycho.
While she was en route for the jail.
Didn't she also quote to the cops, this is why you guys get shot in the face.
Yes. She was a piece of garbage.
In Rochdale jail, she said, this is why cops get shot in the face.
Right.
She also kicked the squad car so hard, the door separated from the frame.
What?
Can you imagine that Glover apparently is trying to work things out with her?
He's married to the Tasmanian devil.
She threatens to take away the kids if he doesn't make a cut or if he doesn't do well.
Yeah, doesn't finish top 10.
Right. She beats him up.
I mean, it reminds me a little bit. This is going way back. It reminds me of the scene in Sunday. Is it Dennis Quaid, who's the quarterback, the aging quarterback of that movie?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to his wife and is basically telling her, look, I'm about to hang it up.
Yeah.
Health issues, my neck. I can't turn my neck.
Right.
You know what? We got enough money to live comfortably. And she just looks him in the face, slaps him in the face, and says, I'm not going to take any of that loser talk from you.
Right.
That's exactly what I thought about when I saw that story.
You know, it's called motivation cakes.
Well, I guess, but it's an extreme
form of it. So you're actually giggling at the story?
Yeah, I'm giggling.
And it's so weird that you do
that. She's garbage.
She's beyond garbage. She's an alcoholic.
And he's an idiot that he allows it.
It tells him, I mean, he's got some serious issues.
You know what I think? I think they have money issues. Like severe money issues. If she's if she's counting on his paycheck,
no, I think she's just an alcoholic. She's just an alcoholic.
There could be some of that where they're overextended.
Yes.
She's spending a ton of money.
She's spending a ton.
He's made millions. I mean, maybe they're overextended and they bought some big ass house they can't afford.
She actually has a pretty decent mugshot. You know, we always talk about mugshots.
Golfers' wives are a show. They all look like Paige Spranick, or however you say her name.
If you want to check out the story.
How do you say her name?
Facebook page.
I forgot Spranick.
Spranick.
Yeah, Paige Spranick. All the golfers' wives look like her.
Yes. You can go to facebook.com/thejunks if you want to see a link to the story.
But it's actually not funny. When I saw that, I was like, oh my God. A, she's an alcoholic. He's in an abusive relationship. He's got, you know, he's tied in because it's the mother of his children. He's got to get out of it, though. Either she's got to go directly to rehab for like a year, or he's just got to donk her off and take the kids.
Could you imagine? He's on like the 12th hole, and in the back of his mind,
no wonder he
won. He's thinking to himself, man, I got a birdie. Hey, or my wife is going to slap me in the face.
Can you imagine what he thought if he dunked it in the water on 17 at Sawgrass that weekend?
Right. Well, dude, think about it. No wonder he hasn't won.
Oh, of course, he's stressed.
Drama at home.
I mean, in a million years, would your wife ever call you the P word?
No chance. But
could you imagine?
Well, you know, Billy Horschel's wife went to rehab, and
she was an alcoholic.
Yeah, and then everything with Billy's game got a lot better after she came back, and they kind of mended everything.
Tight guy too, though. It probably because he's got all this pressure at home.
Right. I should have intro'd the story because now we're talking about Billy Horschel.
Well, it's along the same lines. Is that the wife's an alcoholic and needs to go to rehab?
Yeah. She has to go to rehab for like minimum 6 months because this has apparently been happening for years.
All right. We got Mike Rizzo joining us at 9. Let's do Fact or Fiction real quick.
All right. Let's go
to go see Drake in concert.
Let's go to Pat Crownsville. Hey, Pat, what's up? You're all in the junks. Let me see. It didn't work. Pat, are you there?
Morning, amigos.
Hey, how are you, buddy?
Pat. These are for the Drake tickets. Fact or fiction, LeBron James has been put in concussion protocol by the NBA for the hit he took in the third period and, in fact, will not play in Game 3 in Cleveland on Saturday.
Oh, such fiction.
That is fiction. Congratulations. You're a big winner.
Get a pair of tickets to see Drake with special guest Migos at the Capital One Arena. September 12th, tickets go on sale May 18th through Live Nation and the Capital One Arena box office. But you win your way in all week long with 106.7 The Fan.
Can I tell you, this is just a little side story, that I completely caught Drabby in a lie yesterday.
Oh, you did? He was AWOTing?
Oh, my God.
Can you save that for the 9 o'clock hour?
Well, they don't have that much time.
We'll be able to do it.
We got two guests. I mean, completely caught him in a lie.
You can't leave me hanging for an hour. What did I lie about?
I mean, completely. Valdez, did I catch him in a lie?
Yeah, you definitely caught him.
A stone-cold lie.
Tell me.
So you are so busted.
I'm walking by his computer, and I notice that he's filling out this application for Masters tickets. Drabby, right? For the lottery. A complete lie. And I'm going, I know what he's doing. He's applying, and he wants to pull a Valdez and sell them on eBay because Valdez like made a nice, tidy profit when he won the lottery. He sold his tickets because he was unable to go.
Yeah, and by the way, I already had everything scheduled to go down there and play, and then everyone backed out.
You actually did the lottery because you wanted to go.
Yeah,
bailed on you.
We were going to go play Pinehurst on the way down.
He got jealous, though, because he sold his tickets for like $2,000. So he says, well, I'm going to sign up for this lottery. I know what he's doing. So then he comes, and I'm like, oh, I'll save that for another day. And I go over there, and I start cutting the spot, and then Drabby comes over, and he asks one more question about, should I fill out for 4 or 2? He's asking Valdez while I'm cutting the spot, and I go, what are you doing? You trying to get tickets to sell them, cheapy? He goes, no, I haven't gotten that far. I'm just trying to see if I can win them.
He said, I might go down.
Yeah, I might go down. I haven't thought about it that far yet. Are you kidding? There's one reason why you're doing it.
No, I don't expect to win.
Well, I
you don't expect to win, but if you do, you don't expect to go either. Hey. Don't even front.
Hey, Eric, he doesn't expect to win, but Sarah Cahill signed up for Masters tickets during the lottery, too.
Look at that, Bob.
You
did that, the whole family signed up?
No, she didn't. You think I'm going to go down there on Wednesday to see Jack Nicklaus's nubs grandson
hit 9 irons? I don't think you would go there in the final
irons?
Round.
No, I'll sell those to some
you
idiot.
You would go in the final round to sit in the tower with the gymnast.
Yes, I would. I'll go on a Sunday.
No, you wouldn't. You're doing it to sell it. It's embarrassing.
A weekend at Augusta sounds amazing.
Yeah, right.
Me and John Feinstein.
It's on your bucket list.
You're just stone cold lie because you were embarrassed. Admit you were embarrassed.
Brent, I watched 20 hours of golf this weekend.
Admit you were embarrassed.
I'm going.
Yeah, right.
He's going to stay at Butler Cabin with John.
Right.
Jason has the stomach virus.
He's got sickness. He needs to stay away. He needs to get better. Once he doesn't have a virus that he can infect every single person he comes into contact with, then he can come back.
Problem now, if he stays away the rest of the week and misses the next two shows, we won't see him for 3 weeks because apparently he has a vacation week set
up
next week.
That's correct.
Are you really going to miss him?
I'm not. He's missing out on this Caps run.
He is.
These are fun shows.
Well, not as fun when you lose.
This one
Definitely not as fun.
Oh, but in general.
Not as fun as after the two wins in Tampa.
General.
Yeah. More people are interested, more people listening. We see that in our streaming numbers. Somebody asked, are your ratings up because of this Caps run? I said, well, it's kind of early to tell because the ratings are kind of like backwards.
Takes a while.
It certainly doesn't hurt.
Well, you can see numbers. We could see minute-by-minute streaming numbers. I'll just pull back the curtain for a second. And on the stream, you can see a huge increase in listenership after Caps victories or after Wizards victories.
Also,
just the way it is.
And I've seen the numbers for regular season Caps games, how many viewers there are on TV. We're in a different medium, but how many viewers are on TV? It's like multiplied times 10 for the playoffs.
It's just so much better. It just is. I don't know why.
All the casual fans or non-fans actually pay attention.
This is when families watch games together.
Absolutely.
You know, during the regular season, you watch it on your own. You keep an eye. You're kind of a diehard.
Yeah.
But for the playoffs, your whole family's watching. All right. So we have Mike on.
Bonding moment.
All right. Speaking of playoffs, we fully expect the Nats to be in the playoff hunt. We got a little nervous there, Mike. At the beginning, we're talking to Nats general manager Mike Rizzo, a little kind of a shaky start, and then boom, you guys off and running, still not healthy, and yet you found a way, you sweep the D-backs, you won 13 out of 15, you got to be feeling pretty good about yourself.
Yeah, we feel pretty good. You know, we're, like you said, we started off a little beat up, a little rocky, you know, trying to get it to know the coaching staff, know the players, and vice versa, yeah, you know, you combine some injuries with some newness, and we're trying to like weather a little bit of a storm. You know, we started the season well; we won 4 out of 6.
Right.
You know, then the Eaton injury, and then Rendon went down, and you know, we're without Murphy. But we've kind of righted the ship a little bit, and we're finding ways to win. We're pitching great. You know, playing pretty good defense, and scoring some big runs at big times.
By the way, we're going in the clubhouse with Mike Rizzo, the Nats GM, presented by Burke and Herbert Bank, unexpectedly different. Ryan Zimmerman is one of those guys who's banged up, and you guys sign Mark Reynolds. Talk about that acquisition. He hits 2 home runs his first game.
Well, you know, Mark's a player familiar with me. I signed him as an amateur out of University of Virginia in the 15th round years back, and you know, he's a consummate professional. You know, he's a pro hitter. He's got big-time power, you know, a swing-and-miss type of guy. But when he's hot, he could carry a team. He's coming off a season where he hit 30 home runs and you know, drove in close to 100. So, you know, he's played on that stage before. He's done it. And you know, we felt that, you know, this was before the Zimmerman injury, that, you know, this guy could be a helpful player for us on this team as a bench player, as a guy who could fill in for Zim at times, and kind of you know, really hit left-handed pitching well.
What had he been? What was he doing before?
He was sitting on the couch, working out on his own, and you know, just trying to piece together you know, what he was going to do after you know, having a really good season last year. Was kind of bummed out that he wasn't getting any major league offers, and you know, he was just working out on his own and waiting for an opportunity. And I think the relationship that we had, we kind of talked it into a role here, and he saw some things that that could fit for him, and went for it. And you know, the result is that he was in the big leagues with us after about 2 weeks of playing, and you know, helped us win that game in Arizona, you know, extremely well.
I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, when you look at a guy who played 148 games last year, hit 30 bombs, drove in almost 100, right? Hit almost 270, and he's sitting at home. He's got to be by far the best player that was just floating out there at this point, right? Is there anybody, are there other Mark Reynolds that are sitting on their couches waiting for offers? I mean, I'm sure there's some guys maybe 39, 40, 41, but like, you know, 34, you could still contribute.
Well, yeah, that's what we felt. You know, we liked him at the beginning of spring training. We you know, we reached out and made an offer. At that time, he wasn't ready to take a minor league offer because of the season that he had. And then finally, we circled back and said, you know, kind of gave him a little conversation, saying, you know, what are you waiting for? You know, what are you trying to accomplish here? I want to get back to the big leagues. They said, well, sitting there is not going to help you get back to the big leagues, because if an injury happens, if something does go wrong with a team, you know, you're going to have to go through 4 weeks of spring training to get prepared. So you might as well do the 4 weeks now, and then when something happens, you get to go right away. And we kind of mapped out a plan of attack for him, and he accepted it, and we signed him the next day. And you know, like I said, 2 weeks later, he's in the big leagues for us.
Mike, we know you don't get too high or too low with individual or series wins, but to go to Arizona and sweep the D-backs, giving up just 7 runs in 4 games, that's pretty impressive stuff.
It really was. You know, that Diamondback team is a good team. It's a good offensive club. They've got good pitching. They were the hottest team in baseball when we walked in there. And, you know, going into that road trip, San Diego, you know, 3 in San Diego and then 4 in Arizona, you know, you're hoping to... you know, as you do all the time on a road trip. So, you know, you go 500 and it's a successful trip, those West Coast swings. So going in there and taking 4 from that team, as hot as they were, as good a lineup as they have, it was terrific for us. The starting pitching was outstanding. The bullpen was great. We got some timely hitting. We bunched a few hits up and we played pretty clean baseball. So all in all, it was a really good road trip for us. Arizona was again. It was a May series, but you know, to complete our 2 West Coast swings, get those out of the way before the end of May is good for the club. The travel, it should be much easier from here on in. You know, we don't go much past the Mississippi for the rest of the season, which is great.
You know, Mike, you guys are getting great pitching again, and not to be surprised, especially with your top 4 guys. I mean, the worst guy, you know, statistically, is Strasburg right now, and we know how great he is. But the story I'm amazed by is Hellickson, right? Another one. This is why you're the GM of the year. This is why they give you the big deal. This is why they give you the big money, Mike. So you bring him in, and the way you're managing him, guy has a pitch. Let's be honest. Okay, proven major league pitcher, but hadn't pitched well the last couple years. And you guys, we all know the stats, right? The third go-around, he seems to do a lot worse. And so you guys are managing him where, even if it's the fourth or fifth inning, if he's coming through that third time, you guys are pulling him, maybe after 50, 60 pitches even. And I'm wondering, it's working out perfectly for you, but is that something you can do long-term? Is that the plan long-term for this guy? Can you succeed long-term doing it this way?
Well, I think that, you know, Davey's management of the starting pitching in the bullpen has been terrific. You know, he puts people in position to succeed. He's done that with Hallie. You know, Jeremy's been terrific for us, and we all know the statistics. The third time through, but Davey's given him some rope. The third time through, a couple of the starts he's mm-hmm. pitched, So, you know, the last 2, I think the game dictates how we're going to handle Hellickson or any other starting pitcher. You know, on days where, you know, the bullpen is used up and, you know, sometimes we expect our pitchers to go 7 or 8 innings because of the way the bullpen is. And I'm sure Hellickson will have that type of start sometimes. But we're, so far we've managed his innings terrifically. he's pitched outstanding for us, and he's been a great addition to the club, and the guys fit in the clubhouse perfectly, and you know, it's a pretty seamless fifth start when we run him out there. So you know, I think depending on the bullpen and depending on the situation of the game, that we'll utilize you know, him differently in different scenarios.
Joined by Mike Rizzo, general manager of the Washington Nationals. Mike, it's time for the Burke and Herbert Bank fan question of the week. The Rangers called up 34-year-old lefty Brandon Mann from AAA before Sunday's game in Houston. He'd been in the minors since 2002, but had yet to make his major league debut. What's the hardest part about playing in the minors for an extended period of time, and how does one not lose hope after so many years? That's from Mark in Arlington.
Well, that's a remarkable story. You talk about, you know, a tough kid and stick-to-itiveness and all that stuff and, you know, chasing your dream. You know, the minor league baseball, you know, I played it for several years. I loved it. I mean, it wasn't a great hardship for me. It was playing baseball every day for a living and getting paid for it. But obviously the conditions in the minor leagues are not what they are in the big leagues. You know, the travel's different. The food is different. The accommodations are different. The baseball's different. So, you know, for this guy to really chase his dream for that long, it says a lot about him. It says a lot about the Rangers organization by, you know, giving him that opportunity. I think it's a terrific story, and you know my heartfelt congratulations go out to him. You know, as an old minor league grinder, it's really refreshing to see, you know, guys reach the ultimate goal of the play in the big leagues, to be one of the 750 greatest in the world at that time. Is something to be proud of and to cherish.
All right, Mike, keep it going. It's Mike Rizzo, president of baseball ops, GM of the Nationals. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it a lot.
Okay.
Yep. Thanks, of course, Mike. Every Wednesday, 9 o'clock, we go in the clubhouse with Mike Rizzo, presented by Burke and Herbert Bank. Unexpectedly different. Coming up next, Ken Danico, scheduled to join
us. He was scheduled yesterday.
NHL Network studio analyst. We'll get a different perspective on the Caps.
You know what? Drabby, your job's on the line. Your job's on the line.
On the line.
Hey, it's okay. You know what? He can just go down to Augusta. This is going here, you'll find a job
if
there.
Danico, I'm going to make this executive decision right here.
Okay.
If Danico's not there, you're switching seats with AWOD for the rest of the show.
For the rest of the show, right?
Yeah, you got to cut. You got to cut a video clip.
You're bumping AWOD up,
and AWOD is gonna do whatever you do. I don't even know what you do. He'll sit there and answer calls.
He sells tickets to the Masters.
Seat squeak.
It's on you. Yeah, no more buying tickets to the Masters and all that stuff you do during the show.
Is it French Open coming up?
Right. What are you rooting for?
Adam will be on Nikki Burdine's Facebook page.
And joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline is Ken Danico, an NHL Network studio analyst. NHL Network's NHL Tonight airs live before and after every playoff game. And you can watch Ken on NHL Tonight following tonight's Vegas-Winnipeg game. Hey, Ken.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're doing well.
Doing
Thanks
great.
For joining us. Ken, before we start breaking down Capitals Lightning, I want to talk about one of your longtime Devils teammates, a guy that I loved when he was a Washington Capital, but I was forced to hate his guts when he was a Devil along with you, because all you guys
I know
did,
where you're going.
All you guys did was prevent the Caps from winning Stanley Cups during your guys' run. I'm talking about Scott Stevens. What was it like being part of a defensive core along with him and winning three cups with the Devils with him by your side?
First off, guys, I was no different than you when he was a Washington Capital. I go way back to 1988 when we played you guys in the playoffs and ended up winning that series in seven, and Scotty was an absolute beast. He was no fun to play against, and in fact, in his top 10 hits, I think I'm 10th cutting through the middle, and he sent me doing a cartwheel at center ice. We ended up having a little scuffle after, but I certainly was a lot happier when he became a teammate coming over from St. Louis in that crazy compensation deal. And you know what? He led by example. He was a guy that not overly talkative as a captain, but when the team wasn't going well, and what you want your leaders to do in practice is, you know, work hard. He would get your attention. He would even hit you in practice when things weren't going well to make sure we were ready for next game. So when I was drafted the same year as him in the first round, late in the first round. He was early. I wanted to be a poor man, Scott Stevens. That was my goal. So how about that?
You know, you win three cups. And here with the Caps, we've had a lot of opportunities. We have some great regular seasons, and we kept getting stymied in the playoffs, oftentimes by the Penguins, who we were finally able to get past in this last round. And we talked about the psychological hurdle that that was. Did you ever have a psychological hurdle to get over before you finally could break through and start winning those cups?
Yeah, making the playoffs. My first 5 years, we didn't. We weren't a very good hockey club, but we were young and building towards something. And for us, it was more the miracle. We went on a miracle run in 1988, 7-0-1, our last eight, had to win in overtime, get in the playoffs. And we were able to carry that momentum and win a couple of rounds, beat the Islanders, who were seeded first that year, then the Capitals in second round, and lost to Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals in Game 7 in the third. So it kind of started a different mindset, different culture in New Jersey, that we were going to be a formidable team, a team that could compete on a yearly basis. So that was kind of our turning point. I feel it wasn't necessarily a team, but I remember back in 91 when the Penguins won their first cup, they steamrolled everybody, but people seem to forget we had them down 3-2 in round one, end up losing 4-3, and then they steamrolled after that. So they never would have won that first cup, but nobody remembers. But we had them dead to right, game six at home, leading by a couple of goals as well, and couldn't hang on and lost game seven. So that one stung a little bit, but obviously being part of some of those championship teams after certainly eased the pain. And I look at the Washington Capitals, I'll tell you, they did cross a hurdle. Not just about, you know, slaying the dragon, as everybody's been saying, and the Pittsburgh Penguins and finally beating them, but just the way they're going about it. I mean, down 2-0 at home against Columbus in round one, you got to go through some adversity, fight through it. It makes you stronger, makes your team come together. Their stars are starring. And I really like Alexander Ovechkin. I think he got a bad rap over the years as far as that's what happens when you're a star guy. Well, has Ovechkin done enough? He's been terrific in the playoffs. They just haven't found a way. I thought last year they played great.
Right.
Fell short against Pittsburgh. But just their calming influence, listen to their interviews after the game, and they've got bigger plans. They beat the Penguins, but they were able to move right on from that and play terrific in the first couple of games against the Lightning. No emotional letdown, and they've got some mojo going on. And I speak from teams that I was successful with and fortunate enough to be part of, where you feel confident. You feel anytime you go out there because you've got everybody contributing, fourth line guys scoring goals, your stars playing well, Holtby playing well. I know last night didn't work out, and you expected Tampa to have their best, but the Capitals are going to be a threat here, and I think they've got a good opportunity to possibly go all the way and win it.
Yeah, I think a lot of us agree with you, but we get nervous. You know, I'm big on sort of the psychology, the getting over the hurdle. You talk about that. They've got that. But also in these series, and we see it all the time in the NBA and in the NHL, that things can change on a dime. So the Caps start out this series great, right? They're clearly the better team in these first two games. Bit of a letdown last night, so they're still up 2-1. But psychologically, it's kind of a different thing now, because if they slip, let's just say they play great and puck luck screws them, and now they're 2-2. I mean, this can happen. Happens all the time in the NHL, right? These things can change psychologically on a dime, and I think they factor in on these guys' minds.
Well, absolutely, and Tampa Bay gave you no indication they were going to bounce back in Game 3 after the first two.
Right.
The way the Capitals dismantled them and the way they played. But if it was easy, everybody would win. Everybody would do it. You knew Tampa Bay, the Eastern Conference champions, were going to come out, maybe have an answer in Game 3. And I thought the Capitals did let down a little bit. I mean, look, special teams was the difference in the game, and they scored first, and you play a much different game and play more confident when you get that first goal, and they certainly did on the power play. Capitals took a few too many penalties. But just watching the compete on the puck in the first two games was impeccable for Washington. And it was missing a little bit in Game 3. And that's something that's all part of a learning curve. And I am sure Game 4, they know the importance. They want to go up 3-1 and be able to close it out in Tampa. They're going to come out a lot harder than they did. I just felt there was a little bit of a let-up from the Capitals after winning the first two. And you knew Tampa Bay's backs were against the wall, as they say. And they responded.
Talking to Ken Danico, NHL Network studio analyst. You can watch NHL Network's NHL Tonight live before and after every playoff game. You can watch Ken on NHL Tonight following tonight's Vegas-Winnipeg game. Nicklas Backstrom hasn't been available in the series. How big will it be if he can return for Game 4?
Well, they've done a remarkable job without him, and that just adds another star-type player. Obviously, Lars Eller stepped in and done a good job, but it usually catches up to you in the long run when a star guy's missing. They've been able to get by a few of these games, and their first loss last night without Backstrom was last night in Game 3 against the Lightning. But just his calming influence, his presence, one of the more underrated players in the National Hockey League, a guy that can make plays on a nightly basis and certainly on the power play. So I think it's like adding an element. You're going, wow, we've been able to win without him, but now we get Backstrom back, we're going to be in good shape. And I certainly would think the Caps hope it's sooner than later. I think he might have come back earlier and battled through it if things weren't going so well, but the Caps were afforded that luxury when they were winning without Backstrom to get him a little more healed.
Let me ask you this. You played without teeth. Did you ever play with a broken hand?
As a matter of fact, I certainly did. And the playoffs against the New York Rangers, I had two crushed fingers from a blocked shot. Lou Lamoriello and me quietly went to New York to a hand specialist. We wore a rubber cast with two fingers, cut my glove out like a mitten, and played through it. But our mentality was back then, no matter what, you had to get out there. And certainly I didn't want to miss any time. I somehow managed, but it's not easy. Don't get me wrong.
What do your hands look like these days? Do you look like some of those NFL players where the fingers go in weird directions?
Just one of them is a little bit banged up. But overall, I consider myself very lucky that I kind of got out of the game unscathed a little bit.
Ken, you bring up a good point. Talk about the war of attrition that's going on with all the teams that are still left in the Stanley Cup playoffs, in that you're taking a puck off your hand, or you're taking one off the skate or off your hip, and you see these guys limping off the ice. Some of them don't return, but some of them will come back like for their next shift or for the next period. So that has to add up as you keep getting deeper and deeper into the playoffs.
It does. And this time of year, I mean, hockey players are so courageous, and we've talked about it for many years, not just in my era, but today you see guys getting pucks to the face and coming right back and playing the next period, getting stitched up or losing some chicklets along the way here. But yeah, this time of year, everybody's banged up. You have to, it's a war on nutrition. It's a war of attrition, shall I say. It's the team that can stay healthy, and you mentioned some puck luck along the way. It is a grind, and you've got to battle through it. So everybody this time of year has a lot of players. Every team, if you're in the Final Four, has a lot of guys banged up right now. But you don't hear about it till the playoffs are over, and you just hope you can get through that grind and be the last one standing. And I know through the three cups that I was fortunate to be part of, we had a lot of guys with broken bones or ailing backs or bad arms, whatever it may be, and that's what the price you have to pay to win it all.
You know, another guy who's been critical to the Caps postseason run has been John Carlson. He's got 14 points in the playoffs already. He's got 11 assists and 3 goals. You know, you look at him, he's going to be a free agent. He's going to cash in after the season is done. Do you ever think to yourself, man, I played in the wrong era? If I was playing in 2018, I might get $4 or $5 million a year. I mean, he's going to command $6.5-7 million on the open market. He's been a big part of the Caps' success.
Absolutely. A Jersey native as well, and I do the Jersey Devils game. Boy, would I like to see him there. But having said that, he's been terrific. And, yes, would I have liked to play in this era? Well, of course. I mean, guys, it's business. I God bless them all for getting whatever they can, because it has become a big business. And certainly John Carlson is going to be awarded a nice contract, rightfully so, Norris Trophy candidate. I watched him last night, too, and just the subtle little things he does. He's so smart with the puck, a guy that's been so instrumental on the Capitals' blue line for sure. But, yeah, no question about it. Even role players like myself would be making a couple million more than you normally do. However, I'm just grateful I played the game as long as I did. I don't take for granted it's a privilege to play in the National Hockey League.
Real quick before we let you go, who do you like in the other series to come out?
Well, I tell you, it is so, you know, you look at the Vegas Golden Knights and we're waiting for the bubble to burst. I guess a full 82 games and winning two rounds, there is no bursting of the bubble anymore. I mean, I'm just amazed like everyone else is. In the hockey world, what a story they have become. On paper, the Winnipeg Jets look like a deeper, stronger team, but the best team left that plays like a team, not on paper, is the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, this team is relentless. They battle every night. They always respond like they did in Game 2. I think it's going to be a long, drawn-out series, probably 7 games. I still think the Jets at the end of the day will be the last team standing, but boy, it's hard to ever doubt the Vegas Golden Knights. This has just been a miracle story, and maybe they're not done yet. Maybe Cinderella is not going to go home just yet. What a story that would be if they did make the Stanley Cup Finals, for sure. But I still think the Jets have a little bit more at the end of the day. I think this game tonight, Game 3, is a pivotal one for both clubs.
All right, Ken. It's been fun talking to you. It's Ken Danico from the NHL Network.
Thanks, yeah, let's do it again. Thank you, Ken.
My pleasure, guys. Good talking with you.
Yep. All right, take care,
he joined
buddy.
Us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline.
That's a tough dude. And, you know, I was bringing up Carlson. He wasn't the John Carlson type of defenseman where he provided a lot of offense, but that dude is tough. I remember watching him play along with Scott Stevens. Mm-hmm. That was a brutal defense
and
in New Jersey.
Reading about him, he was famous for playing without the teeth. Did he have one missing tooth like Ovi, or
he
did he have
multiple.
A couple?
He had the big,
he had a
giant,
big old hole in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's old school hockey right there, when you basically have no teeth up top. Mm. He was a good guest. Appreciate him joining
EB
us.
EB was disappointed, even though he was a good guest.
Yeah.
I think he was rooting for a no-show so that Drab would be bounced out
yeah,
of
it. I'd like to see him.
You know what?
I'd like to see him
demoted.
Do
we call that Drab? First chair? You know, like, you were a guy that was in the band.
Sure. Came through, Drab.
I think so.
What do they call it in band?
I think he and Valdez are co-first chairs. That's what I would say. But so, yeah. Either one. I'd like to see Drab demoted. I have no problem with that.
By the way, speaking of AWOD. Big surprise, I encountered him in the bathroom. I mean, when he's not sitting next to Drab, he's always in the bathroom, and he was messing with his hair, and I said, you know what, you might need a haircut, and he said, have to wait till Friday
payday.
For the paycheck to come through. Mm. And I thought to myself, if I needed to wait for my paycheck to come through
to get a
haircut, I would jerk the wheel into oncoming traffic.
It is that?
And
meanwhile,
all.
He's probably still spending all kinds of money on the vending machine.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he... I mean, he probably has 1,000 financial life leaks over there.
Is that because he has no credit card? Is that the deal?
Probably maxed out.
Or is it maxed out?
I'm guessing.
Right, because he's got like a $500 or like $250. Doesn't he have like a humiliating balance?
Adam, what is your credit card situation?
I have a $300 limit, and I'm at
$299. My
life's joking. So do you have like when was the last time you made a payment on your credit card?
Last month. I'm on time with it.
You are? What do you make the minimum? You pay the minimum like every other dope?
Why don't you call them to try and get your limit a little bit higher?
They said I need, you know, 3 more months of
credit.
Regular, yeah.
So you recently, this is a brand new credit card that you've acquired.
Yes.
Yeah. Why did, what took you so long? You've been out of college. I mean, Mike, well, he doesn't have his own, but he uses my credit card. But I mean.
My checking account was pretty good for a while. And then, you know, I decided I had
you
to get a credit
that,
card.
So you felt it that. Yeah. But you understand, credit is not something where you like borrow the money and then never pay it back.
The available
you know
balance
that, right?
is
yeah. I'm going to pay it back on Friday.
And 46 right. cents.
Min payments like a mug.
So many min payments.
I live
Do you know how high the finance charge is on your payments on your balance? It's probably like 19%. It might be 25%.
He probably doesn't understand what that means.
No, I'm sure he doesn't.
Does that mean that next month it rolls over so I owe another 19%? Of the original?
It means that a charge is tacked on to whatever you're not paying every month. So right. It just keeps climbing and climbing. And you keep spiraling further and further into a debt hole. That's where you are right now. Big old deep debt hole.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.